got
to get forward. The hour of 6:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the House Senate Higher Education Committee. We need to establish a quorum. Clerk will take the roll. Bonoff.
Aye.
Clausen.
Here.
Eakin. Fischbach.
Present.
Kent.
Present.
Lori. Miller. Ortman. Peterson. Pratt. Sharon. Sparks. Torres Ray. Pulowski.
Here.
Breinart.
Here.
Dorholt.
Here.
Fitzsimmons.
Here.
Franzen. Gruenhagen.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Leanne. Nornes.
Here.
Norton.
Norton.
Here.
Poppy.
Present.
Rosenthal.
Here. She brings me my mail.
Swedzinski.
Here.
Teese.
Here.
Winkler. Carlson.
The clerk could report the number, please, of both the House and Senate.
Combined.
Combined.
I need you to split it. I need you to give me the number of the senators, and I need you to give me the number of the House members.
There are 4 senators present, and there are 12 representatives present.
All right. Members, according to the rules, we need a quorum from each side to take action tonight. So our next order of business would have been the adoption of the rules, but we don't yet have a quorum on the Senate side. So I am going to move to number 4 on the agenda, the report of the Regents Candidate Advisory Council. And I have Mr. Fisher and Ms. Porter. Are they here? If they would come down and identify themselves for the record and give the report of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council to the committee. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, sir. My name is David Fisher. I'm a resident of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I am vice chair of the Regents Candidate Advisory Council. I want to mention that our chair, Pat Duncanson of Mapleton, Minnesota, regrets not being able to be here this evening.
And I'm Harriet Porter, a resident of St. Paul, a graduate of the Carlson Executive MBA program at the University of Minnesota, and I am privileged to serve as the co-vice chair of the RCAC.
Welcome to the committee, and would you give the report of the Region Advisory Council, please?
Yes, sir. Co-chair is Senator Bonoff, Representative Pulowski, and members of the Joint Legislative Committee. Good evening. As I mentioned, my name is David Fisher. I am going to share the testimony tonight with Co-chair Porter, and what I'd like to do is just give an overview of why we're here and what we've done. As you know, for calendar year 2013, there will be 4 positions on the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota coming to term, one representing the 5th Congressional District, one constituting the seat reserved for a student of the university, as well as 2 at-large seats. And we have recommended candidates to this committee for each of these 4 positions. I think you probably likely have been briefed by your own staff concerning the process. Just as a reminder and to orient to people who aren't familiar with the council, the Constitution does require 12 regents to be elected by a joint convention of the Minnesota Legislature to sit on the Board of Regents with staggered 6-year terms for the purpose of governing the university. 1/3 of these individuals are elected every odd-numbered year. This being an odd-numbered year, we have 4 up for election. Minnesota law specifies that 8 of the 12 regents must reside in the Minnesota's congressional districts, 1 in each district, and the 4 remaining are elected at large, one of whom is a student of the University of Minnesota at the time of election. Our Regent Candidate Advisory Council is established by the legislature in statute to identify, recruit, and screen recommended qualified candidates to this committee. The council has 24 members, including two student members appointed by the House and the Senate to staggered terms, and we consider it truly a citizens' council with representatives from every corner of the state, each serving without compensation, but out of a sense of service to our state, the university, and the, our legislature. As a part of its charge from the legislature, the council acts on your behalf to develop selection criteria for recruiting and screening region candidates. And we work with stakeholders on developing these criteria, and then go out to recruit the best candidates we are able to find to serve as regents. In all our affairs, the council operates under open meeting format. We publicly announce our meetings and are actively inviting comments throughout the process from key stakeholders in the region candidate process to comment throughout that process. And finally, the council is charged to make recommendations to this committee, a minimum of two and a maximum of four individuals for each regent seat to be filled.
On behalf of the RCIC, I am privileged to share with the committee that the council has prepared, adhered to, and submitted with its report to the committee its selection criteria for this year's candidates for the Board of Regents. These criteria were carefully prepared by a committee of the council and discussed, revised, and adopted by the council in open meetings during 2012. Criteria include a personal component and a professional component. The personal component reflects a commitment toward the sustainability and success of the University of Minnesota and its strategic vision. Bold independence of thought, highly effective communication skills, diversity in its broadest definition, and ethical standards beyond reproach are additional personal attributes that we carefully and thoughtfully considered during our process. The criteria on the professional side, among others, requires experience in the governance of large, complex organizations, including accomplishment, knowledge, and breadth and depth of expertise. In addition to depth and breadth of understanding of the three-pronged mission of the University of Minnesota, research and discovery, teaching and learning, and outreach and public service, the selection criteria this year was expanded to emphasize the global context within which the university operates increasingly. Both the personal and professional experiential categories of the selection criteria were expanded to include the critical necessary perspectives of international awareness and experience in the governance of large complex organizations operating within a global context.
With that, did that complete your report? I'm sorry.
Just a few more comments, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind. I did want to explain that using these criteria, and it's a role that I helped fulfill as chair of the Committee on Recruitment, we did an extensive search of candidates across the state, the 5th Congressional District, and among students, in particular sending to 1,300 deans and student organizations information concerning the selection process on all campuses. We worked with the Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Business Partnership, which alerted their members of openings. Letters are sent to each of the 87th and 88th legislatures to make sure that we were asking them, those individuals, for their recommendations as well. And we did send notices to past regent applicants as well back to 2007. We did work with the Minnesota League of Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Alumni Association, and other organizations to try to get the word out. And with that, we had 33 applications in total for the four positions. We interviewed 14 of those as finalists.
In the case of each of these finalists...
Ms. Porter, it's okay. I'm just recognizing you. There's nothing to be upset about.
May I go on?
You may. Usually we go through the chair and we recognize people, but that's all right.
I apologize.
Please continue.
In the case of each of these finalists, the council reviewed candidate applications and essays, as well as references from at least three individuals, and conducted an interview of each candidate for 45 minutes, with each finalist featuring an extensive question and answer period. From these finalists, the council is referring nine candidates for consideration by the Joint Legislative Committee. The breadth of experience and expertise of the applicants made this process extremely difficult. This was not an easy task, and each member of the council took it quite seriously. We stayed the course, followed the law, our own adopted procedures, and our established criteria to the letter. The council is confident that it has selected an exemplary group of candidates for your consideration. The finalists recommended by the Regent Candidate Advisory Committee are by congressional district and in alphabetical order, fifth congressional district, Dennis Nguyen, Arturo Tushu. Students, Drew Covey, Abdul Omari, and Christopher Casted. At large, Linda Cohen, Dean Johnson, Peggy Lucas, and Kelly Smith.
And Mr. Chair, just in conclusion, I want to thank you. I want to express that our Regents Candidate Advisory Committee is indebted to particularly the Legislative Coordinating Commission and Sally Olson and Diane Henry for their fine staff work, as well as a network of individuals that are supportive of this effort and the University of Minnesota and the legislative process. We're very indebted to all these individuals, but also privileged to have participated in this recruitment process. And thank you for your time.
Mr. Fisher, Ms. Parr, thank you for your work and for presenting to us the slate of candidates. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, so it is a privilege to be with you all tonight, and I want to thank you very much for the work that you did in selecting outstanding candidates, because I think as members will hear tonight and those who are joining us, it was a very, very, very difficult decision because of the outstanding people that you put before us. And so I just wanted to make a note for the record that, in fact, as we considered the candidates that you put forward, it was noted that Peggy Lucas had put herself in both the 5th District and the at-large. We understand that you put forward Peggy Lucas in the at-large category, and as you'll see that, legislators do with that what they choose. And so just want to make sure to say that. And also, we in the Senate, we're not here for the original roll call, but it should be noted we are here 100% now.
Any questions of the two presenters? Seeing none, thank you. And I'm going to return to item number 3, the adoption of rules. Members, you have in your packet the rules. I'm going to move the rules of the Joint Convention. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The rules are adopted. And Representative Carlson. Is on the committee, but we may lose him because he's got Ways and Means also. So he's doing number 5, the report of the 5th Congressional District. Representative Carlson, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
And I'm State Representative Lyndon Carlson, and we have a little bill up in Ways and Means Committee tonight, the health care exchange. So I'll need to be down there fairly soon. I was asked to convene the 5th Congressional District caucus, and I was then elected as chair of the caucus. We had 10 members of the 5th District who were present. We had an additional 12 proxy votes, which we allow by our congressional district rules to be cast. We had an opportunity for each of 4 candidates who expressed an interest in receiving the recommendation of the 5th Congressional District. Each of the 4 made a presentation before the delegation, and we then cast our ballots, and on the first ballot, Ms. Peggy Lucas received the recommendation of the 5th Congressional District.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
I'm going down to number 6, additional nominations, and at this point I'll go to Rule 4. A candidate other than those recommended by the Advisory Council may be nominated for consideration by the Joint Committee only if the nominee receives the support of at least 3 House members and 2 Senate members of the Joint Committee. Does anyone wish to make a nomination at this time? And then we would have to follow Rule number 4. Anyone wish to make a nomination at this time? Anyone wish to make a nomination at this time? Seeing none, then nominations are closed. Let's go to number 7, University of Minnesota Region candidates. We have the 5th Congressional District, and if we could have those candidates come down, and then each will give a 5-minute presentation, and we're going to hold the candidates to 5 minutes. The first one is Mr. Tutsu, I have, and then Mr. Nguyen and Ms. Lucas. So if they would come down and do a 5-minute presentation, and who's timing here?
And you want all three?
Yes, let's get all three down here at once so we can just go from one to the other. It's going to be a long evening, and we'd like to expedite things if we could.
Candidates, you can have a seat right at the table.
Sure. And if you would identify yourself for the record, please. Welcome to
yes.
the committee.
Thank you. I am Arturo Tuzju, a candidate from 5th District. Chair Bonoff and Chair Pawlowski and the members of the Joint Committee, thank you for considering my candidacy. And I'm passing around the bio with the text of my talk tonight is also printed on the back. Please allow me to again put forth the principal elements of my background and life experiences that will inform my service on the Board of Regents. I believe they all fit well into the team environment, skills, balance, and diverse perspective needs of the 12 regents who govern the University of Minnesota on behalf of the entire state. I will present these to you in four bullet points. Number one, as the head of Dayton's, Hudson's, Marshall Field's, Macy's department stores, for the last 12 years of my career there, I presided over 35,000 team members, $3.3 billion of sales, and $1.1 billion in budget. I worked with board of directors, executives, hourly team members, commission team members, and union team members, and helped merge five companies during that span of time. After I left Macy's, I led LifeTouch Photography Company as their president and chief operating officer for 3 years, which conducted business in all 50 states and Canada and had $1 billion of volume. My point here is that I bring the leadership experience of large and complex organizations, which the University of Minnesota has become. And my hands-on experience and understanding of complex entities will be very helpful as a member of the Board of Regents. My second point, I am currently an executive fellow and an adjunct faculty at the Opus College of Business at the University of St. Thomas, teaching leadership courses at the MBA level. Having done this for 3 years now, I understand how teaching needs evolve with technology or needs to evolve with technology and available, as well the way young people learn today. Also, I see the other side of the token as an executive coach to high-level executives, where I see what is relevant in business today and how we need to evolve our higher education system to meet the needs of today's environment. So, as I combine my real-world business experience with the first-hand knowledge of how our education system needs to evolve, I feel I bring two key foundational elements of experience and knowledge to the regent position. Number three, from all the board of directors experiences I had to date, serving for 8 years on the University of Minnesota Alumni Association Board of Directors was the most rewarding. I learned a great deal about how the university functions and how complex it is, but also what a great institution it is. During my last 3 years as chair-elect, chair of the board, and immediate past chair, we met with three top regents quarterly, which we called 3x3, and exchanged information and ideas, which gave me the insights into the Board of Regents. My passion and desire to continue serving my beloved university is not new. Now I want to serve it even at a higher level as a regent. My last and the fourth point, I want to make a point about diversity. We all know and see the changing demographics around us. So the issue of diversity is an important one for the U as well. I hope you don't see diversity only as an issue of gender. I bring an international background, represent religious diversity, and cultural diversity which have merit beyond gender. I hope the 4 points I make here about my differentiating attributes convince you of the value I can bring as a regent. Thank you for the opportunity to share my background with you. I am fully prepared to make the intensive time, energy, and skills commitment that is demanded of this high honor. Thank you again for considering my candidacy.
Thank you, Mr. Tuzju.
Thank you. Mr. Wen. Now, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good evening. My name is Dennis Nguyen. I've lived the American dream at a critical juncture in the history of the U, given my record of success, international private sector experience, educational credentials, detailed knowledge and support of public higher education. I am offering myself up for election to serve on the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. I began this regent campaign with a singular focus on wanting to serve our university and our state. I am proud of the bipartisan campaign I've assembled. I've met up with over 90% of the 201 legislators in the Senate and the House. Along the way, I've secured endorsements ranging from Speaker Paul Thiessen in Minneapolis, to Senator Fungher in St. Paul, to Senator Julie Rosen in Fairmont, to Hussein Samatar of the Minneapolis School District Board, the first Somali publicly elected official in Minnesota, to the Council for Asian Pacific Minnesotans, to the Hmong American Partnership, to Matt Rao, a member of the U's last Big Ten championship football team, and finally to Michael Drake, Chancellor of the University of California, Irvine, and one of the very few African Americans to lead a major public research university. The bipartisan nature of my campaign is a testament to the type of regency I would lead. In my eyes, there would be no differentiation among Democrats and Republicans, urban nor rural, north nor south, in serving the Board of Regents. Rather, we are only proud Gophers. Many have asked why I would take 2 months of my life running for this volunteer position. Well, it is because of my passion for the university and wanting to give back to my state for all the wonderful things that's given me. Because if it were not for the scholarship that I received in the mid-1990s to attend the University of Minnesota Law School, it is safe to say I wouldn't be sitting here tonight asking for your vote. A brief description of myself. I am the son of working-class Vietnamese refugees who came to California in 1975 at the age of five. Second, I'm the father of four young children ranging from 13 years of age to 11 months. Third, I fervently believe that higher education can promote social justice and social mobility. I earned double bachelor's degrees in economics and Chinese literature from the University of California, Irvine. I earned a master's in international studies from the Johns Hopkins University in Washington, D.C. I earned a Juris Doctor from the University of Minnesota Law School. And finally, I earned an MBA from the University of Chicago. Fourth, I run an international private equity investment firm based here in Minneapolis, possessing over 16 years of executive management and corporate board director experience. I've taken five companies public via initial public offerings in Hong Kong, Singapore, London, and the United States. I've served on 10 companies' boards of directors. Fifth, I'm a passionate supporter of my alma mater, the University of Minnesota. I am a former law school adjunct professor. I currently serve on the law school board of advisors. Sixth, I'm currently an active member of various academic and nonprofit boards, including the University of California, Irvine Foundation Board of Trustees and the Minnesota Historical Governing Board. My campaign focuses on three main themes. First, I will utilize my finance acumen. Look, I've spent the last 16 years of my life investing in entrepreneurial companies, growing revenues, finding inefficiencies in large organizations, and yes, cutting costs. Exactly the type of skills that we need today for someone to sit on that University of Minnesota Board of Regents. Leveraging my career in mergers and acquisitions and venture capital, I would work with the board and the administration in reconstructing the 20th century business model and creating a new public-private partnership between the U and the stakeholders of this state. We need to resolve the U's funding issues, develop additional revenue streams to meet the needs of an increasing complex research organization, find new business partners, streamline administrative costs, and finally lower the cost of tuition. Additionally, I can authoritatively approach the issue of board governance given my experience on corporate, university, and academic boards. Second, I will leverage my international experience. Although raised in the United States from the ages of 5 to 22, I was born in Vietnam and have lived more than half my adult life overseas. I intend to seek new partnerships with other centers of academic excellence throughout the world. Finally, I will be an advocate and a role model for historically disenfranchised communities. In doing so, I hope to increase access and financial aid to the U for such communities. I trust you all now understand why I'm running for regent. It is my passion, my experience, my readiness to contribute, and my understanding of the issues that make me uniquely qualified to serve on this board. I humbly ask for your support and look forward to answering any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Nice timing, too. Ms. Lucas, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Pawlowski and Chair Bonhoff and members, I am delighted to appear for you tonight, and thank you for your consideration of my candidacy. I think that I've met with almost all of you, and I will not try not to repeat my story, but I will hope to fill in some of the blanks that illustrate why I believe that I have the experience and the dedication to become a good regent. I've told you all about my 30-year business experience in housing development. Sure. I didn't tell you that that business grew out of my membership in the League of Women Voters. I co-chaired a housing study long ago, and the rest is history. I served on the local, state, and national boards of the League and had the privilege of serving one term as second vice president of the League of Women Voters of the United States, which was a very, very rich experience, which I will always treasure. I believe that the League model of study and consensus has served me well in my service on other boards. Also, as part of my housing business, I developed 16 projects in the university neighborhoods. Most of these were small infill projects in cooperation with neighborhood groups. As a result, I have a good understanding of the university and its context. I served on the University Real Estate Advisory Committee, which was started by the foundation, and which has looked at ways to strengthen the surrounding neighborhoods and support them so that, with the goal of keeping the university community a safe and lively place for our student population. I told you of my deep and long-standing volunteer experience at the university through the University Foundation Board and the Humphrey School Board of Advisors. I didn't tell you that about 15 years ago I was asked to chair the Hockey Task Force with a man, a wonderful man named Bob Ritter. And our job was to raise the money to build a hockey arena for the women's team, which was just coming into fruition then. We raised it through private donations and help from the legislature, and this year it's been a privilege and fun to watch the University of Minnesota women's team go undefeated, breaking all records, and now filling Ritter Arena almost every time. I told you about my service on other complex boards that have served the public interest, such as the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, which I served on for 18 years. But I didn't tell you that I was on the first board of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. And in those days, I chaired the committee that built the facilities. And I remember I was visiting with Paul Erickson in the hallway the other day, and we remembered how we bought the sod fields around there, which now are the National Sports Center. And it's gratifying to see that year after year now, hundreds of teams come from all over the country, including foreign countries, to play in the Schwann's Cup. And Paul tells me that we attract over 5 million visitors a year to the National Sports Center. So it's fun to watch those things grow and come to fruition. I shared with you that I received a BA from the university and went on later to receive a Master's of Social Work. I didn't share with you how important it was that tuition was affordable to me and my parents because they had been left with diminished resources after fleeing two wars. I also shared with you the worldview that I acquired as a result of my life experiences, which resulted in 2 years in the Peace Corps in Iran. I have had a very rich and challenging life. I have loved my board service and am proud of my career in housing. Service on the Board of Regents, to me, is not about building a resume, but instead is about giving back to a state and a university that has meant a lot to me and that has given me so much. I care deeply about the university and its role in the well-being of the state, and I believe that the university lives up to its potential. Minnesota is the winner. I think that I've demonstrated numerous examples of the leadership experience I would bring to the Board of Regents. I think that my colleagues at all levels would say that I am a good team player. I do my homework. I take my responsibilities seriously. I do not grandstand. I do not micromanage, but I am a good networker. I'm good at bringing energy to important ideas. As my colleagues at ArtSpace wrote recently when they nominated me for a Lifetime Achievement Award in real estate, they said, Peggy has an uncanny ability to see all the moving parts of a project and fit them together. I think that this is the kind of regent that the university needs. I would be honored to be selected so that I can be part of the vision that will serve the university and the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lucas. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Senator Bonhoeffer. We're going to try to alternate tonight and make it a fair Senate-House leadership. It'll be a paradigm shift, benchmarking, and many other things that are new. So, Senator Bonhoeffer, you're
And, of course, Chair Pelosi, you're welcome to chime in at any time.
I probably will.
Yeah. Very good. So, members, I think what we'd like to do now is rather than go on to the next group, we will actually have discussion with the candidates for the 5th, ask questions, and then we'll take the vote on the 5th, and then we'll move to at-large. So if Mr. Nguyen and Mr. Tutsku could come to the table, we'll open it up for questions. And I guess before I do that, I just want to tell all three of you how profound it is to have three people with such deep commitment and passion for this state, for all that you have done to contribute to this state, and for putting forward your hat in the ring for this honor, as I know you see it as that. So thank you very, very much. So with that, I'll open it up for questions. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is about certainly the University of Minnesota is a strong Twin Cities-based campus, but there are other campuses throughout the state, and there are other things such as the Hormel Institute, which is within my community in Austin. And I'm just would like to get your perspective on how the full university should be managed, and in how you would involve yourself to understand the entire state and its importance with the university.
Mr. Tutsu?
Yes, I'll go first. Representative Poppy, thank you for the question. You know, I have spoken about this as we had one-on-one meetings with you, and one of the things I see as an opportunity as large universities like the University of Minnesota is pursuing is centers of excellence. Especially this relates to the 5 campuses and trying to concentrate certain subjects, not 100% of all the subjects, but certain subjects on a certain campus so we can put all of our capital dollars and our best teaching forward to be able to create the best possible education within one centers of excellence rather than 2 or 3. So that is an opportunity we have to be able to reduce costs and also increase efficiencies and also excellence. And on the other hand, the outreach, you know, the outreach component of it, as you have mentioned, 16 outreach components, which includes Hormel. And these are some terrific opportunities for us to be able to expand the reach of the university, to be able to do research and also involve other communities other than the communities that have these 5 campuses to be a part of the university's vision of research and outreach. So I see those as very vital overall for the excellence of the university going forward. So those are 2 ideas. Thank you.
Well, I've always been taught to let the lady go first, so I'm going to let Ms. Lucas go ahead.
Ms. Lucas.
So kind of you. I have a soft voice. Well, I've thought that it was, when you look at the map, I think it's very important that we see these 4-5 pieces of the university that pretty much cover the state. And I think I agree with Arturo there that the specialties make it, make the whole thing work. I know that important research comes out of the University of Duluth. I was up at Lake Superior last year and listening to, they have a grant for studying all the Great Lakes, and it was including Lake Superior, Lake Malawi, and so forth, and they have a robot that goes up and down the lake, and really important research can come out of all 4 corners. Rochester certainly has a niche. Crookston is a jewel, I think, in its own way. So I think that making the most of all of these branches is how the university will be great. It certainly can't be great just coming from the Twin Cities, even though I understand most of the research dollars come in there.
Mr. Wynn.
Representative Poppe, I would answer this question multifold. First, this is one of the things I think the University of Minnesota mission is a three-part mission: teaching, outreach, and of course research. Look, I'm a businessman. We have a five-part, sometimes six-part university, if you include the St. Paul and Minneapolis campuses. I think there's two main issues that we are looking at for the U today. One is growing new revenues, and then two, looking at rationalizing costs. Maybe it's something to consider to have certain campuses of the University of Minnesota focus on certain strengths. And so I'm not suggesting we move wholesale departments to different campuses, but the focuses would help rationalize costs. And as we focus on certain things, for example, with our extension and outreach, maybe we could go and work with our corporate partners and help them, have them collaborate with us in developing new revenue streams. Maybe that's a way to take care of certain costs and grow revenues. And so that's how I would look at it. We need to invest in outreach, invest in extension, because look, at the end of the day, the University of Minnesota is an economic engine of our state. We can't have it not do well in outstate Minnesota. It has to do well both metro and outstate. But given where we are in terms of budget issues here in the state legislature, the new public-private partnership, which I've been proposing, maybe that's something that we should look at.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like you to briefly comment on the appropriate role of the Board of Regents in relation to the university budget and how you would differentiate between oversight and micromanagement.
Mr. Wynn.
The Board of Regents, we are a governing board of the university representative. In terms of the actual budget, we've hired a university president and very capable administrators in coming up with a budget. We at the board would work very closely with him in looking at his strategy and his overall macro view on where to take the university, and we would approve such strategy. In terms of the actual budget itself, he would have to come up with, in line with the strategy laid out by the board in implementing the operational budget of the university.
Ms. Lucas?
I agree that the president and the staff come up with the budget that fits the vision, but I think that the Board of Regents has to be very aware of the vision and the way they can help make it happen, but also be very aware of the reality of resources. So very much the board is not a micromanaging board, it's a policy board, and I believe that totally. I think I mentioned to some of you that I was on a committee in 1995 that looked at the proper role of the Board of Regents. It happened to be a time that the board and the president weren't getting along very well, and it was a very interesting study, and I look back on that study, and it's current today, but it's all about realizing what the policy role is and supporting the vision without getting into the details, the finer details.
Thank you. Mr. Tuzju.
Chairs Bonoff and Bolovsky and Representative Briner. I feel the role of the regents is very clear as a governing body rather than a managing body. And having said that, I agree with the University of Minnesota's president's vision, which is very clear. And the budget that goes along with that needs to be justified. And I also believe in group settings, asking good questions, and digging in and really finding out the whys before the whats, if you would, and eyeball-to-eyeball communications. And I think that's the role of the regions, to really understand the eaches, if you would, and ask the questions and get grounded and challenge when it's necessary, and also maybe give some suggestions. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this and that? And to be able to, dig in and make sure that the vision is coming alive with the best budget possible through that challenging and questioning process.
Chair Pulowski.
I'd like to ask one more question. This one's a little more detailed. I want you to respond to the concerns raised by President Kaler at the very beginning of his administration on administrators and the number and the scope of administration at the U, subsequently, unfortunately, reinforced by a Wall Street Journal article which made it national, and then finally and unbelievably, the governor of this state, before he would release his budget for higher education, qualified the University of Minnesota's budget increase by saying it had to do a report, which was at the request of Senator Bonhoeff and Senator Bach, on the number of administrators and what exactly was the benefit of those administrators at those salaries and at those numbers to the university. So could you, in some specificity, address what you as a regent would do?
Mr. Tuzju.
May I? Yes. Thank you, Chair Bonhoeff and Chair Pulowski. You know, coming from a business perspective and having merged five companies during my tenure at Dayton Hudson Corporation, I will look at the 19 collegiate units, and which are currently, to some extent, managed as fiefdoms. And rightfully so, their objectives and their keen interest is teaching and research. But the behind-the-scenes operations, such as you don't need 19 human resources offices. You don't need 19 operations. You don't need 19 purchasing departments. So I will look at those as opportunities to efficiently and effectively, and even potentially, as the provost is in charge of the academic affairs, I would appoint a chief operating officer from all of that back office functions to manage the operations and administrative functions of the university under one person, rather than the president himself trying to manage 20, 30, 40 different task forces happening today. So I really see that as an opportunity overall to be able to reduce the expenses and increase the efficiency and have operational excellence, and so we can truly focus on the real objective of the university, which is teaching, research, and outreach, rather than administrative affairs. Thank you.
Ms. Lucas.
Well, I too think that the Wall Street Journal report was an opportunity, honestly, to look closely at how the university is operated. I was at the foundation board meeting last week and heard the president's explanation, of which is in many ways makes sense. But I think we need to look deeper than that. And I agree that the 19 units, how much duplication there is. I think that hopefully will come out of his the president's hiring of a consultant to look at span and reach. But I think it's going to be a difficult decision and difficult discussion, and that we shouldn't settle for anything but getting really to the bottom of how the university can run as efficiently as possible, because in the end everybody wins if we can do that. And so I look at it as, you know, unfortunate that we had that kind of publicity, but an opportunity to really dig deep.
Mr. Wynn.
Yeah, I think this is Chair Pulowski. I think this is a wonderful question. I think it's a differentiating in the style which I would bring to the Board of Regents. Look, I've sat on 10 company boards of directors, chaired 3 audit committees. If this was to happen with the Wall Street Journal article coming out, well, you better believe the next board meeting I would have immediately asked the audit committee to come up with and to meet with the university administration and actually go through line item by line item which are the administrators that the Wall Street Journal is actually talking about. President Kaler, much to his credit, obviously, as you know, he's refuted much of the Wall Street Journal article and saying, well, the actual definition of the administrators are out of line. Well, I would actually call the administrators come in and say, tell me which administrators are out of line. Who are the administrators? How much are they getting paid? Let's establish some baselines starting year zero today, and then we can then redo what the budget is for the next year. I think that's the way to bring accountability to the university administrators. That's the role of the board. That's the role of board governance in producing oversight over management, in this case, university administrators. And so to directly answer your question, I would review line item by line item who actually are the administrators, what they're getting paid. Because that's really the thesis of the criticism of the Wall Street Journal article is this. Student tuition has grown over 100% from $6,500 in 2001 to $13,000 in 2011. And essentially, the growth of student tuition is really producing this outgrowth in administrative costs. And so that's what I would really hone in on. And thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Members, at this time, what I'd like to do is vote on the 5th district candidates, and the way we'll do that is I will ask our clerk, Sean Oyes, to take the roll, and we'll do it alphabetically. We're going to begin with the Senate and then do the House. So, and go ahead.
Clausen.
Mr. Wynn.
Eakin.
Lucas.
Fishbach.
Wynn.
Kent.
Lucas.
Lori.
Lucas.
Miller.
Wynn.
Ortman.
Wynn.
Peterson.
Wynn.
Pratt.
Wynn.
Sharon.
Lucas.
Sparks.
Lucas.
Torres Ray.
Lucas.
Bonoff.
Lucas.
Reinert.
Lucas.
Dorholt.
Wynn.
Fitzsimmons.
Wynn.
Franzen.
Wynn.
Gruenhagen.
Wynn.
Johnson.
Lucas.
Leanne.
Lucas.
Norness.
Wynn.
Norton.
Lucas.
Poppy.
Lucas.
Rosenthal.
Wynn.
Swedzinski.
Wynn.
Teese.
Wynn.
Winkler.
Lucas.
Pulowski.
Lucas.
The vote is 14-14. And the rules are such. Right. So. Members, Well, it was a tie overall. What the rules state is that it is a what is required is a majority in each body. So there being 7 for Ms. Lucas in the Senate and 8 for Ms. Lucas in the House, that would mean that Ms. Lucas won that vote.
No. 8 for win.
Oh, 8 for win.
Madam Chair.
I apologize. I had the vote totals wrong. So there being 7 in the Senate, and that was for Peggy Lucas, and there being 8 for Dennis Wynn in the House. So
well, how many total votes? It's got to be a majority in each House.
Madam Chair. Doesn't help.
Senator Ortman,
could you just tell us which rule it is that you're applying to the voting?
Rule number 2, Senator Ortman. In voting, a majority of votes cast from each body. A nominee, number 13, a nominee must receive a majority vote of members from the House and a majority vote from the members of the Senate in the Joint Committee in order to be recommended to the Joint Convention. And Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, could you apply your reading of the votes to rule number 13 to explain to us how you've concluded that?
Right. And so, Senator Ortman, did you understand first that I misspoke?
Right. Okay. So your current ruling, if you would just apply it to how this works.
So my current ruling is that in the Senate, the majority was for Ms. Lucas. In the House, the majority was for Mr. Wynn. So we're going to need to do the vote again. And according to the rules, a third candidate would drop off. With all due respect, Mr. Tutsu, yep. That doesn't change the voting in this particular case. But we will, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
No, go ahead.
Can you just explain what happens if no candidate meets number 13?
Goes to the vote on the floor. There's no recommendation.
Senator Ortman, what I'm being told is there would be no recommendation.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Clerk, just for clarification, could you tell me the number of members of the House Committee? I can't, because I'm not sure how many are supposed to be here. And
Senator Fischbach, there are 15.
15. Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, as I read rule number 10, it says the voting process will continue until a nominee receives the necessary votes to be recommended. So it would seem to me that we are here until someone changes their vote.
They vote to suspend the rules.
Or loses the battle of sitting. The 23rd ballot.
You want?
Madam Chair, could we move to suspend? Thank you, Madam Chair. If that is the case, could we move to suspend the rules and send and just make no recommendation? Clearly, the two nominees are very good, and we couldn't make a decision here.
Senator Torres, what I'd like to do is to play this out a little while longer. You know, you may end up getting to that point, but I think it is worth taking the vote one more time, and then Chair Plowski and I will confer, and we will get back to you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
He wants a question.
Oh.
No.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to ask the clerk to take the roll one more time.
Could we ask questions?
Clausen.
Mr. Wynn.
Eakin.
Lucas.
Fischbach.
Wynn.
Kent.
Lucas.
Lori.
Lucas.
Miller.
Wynn.
Ortman.
Wynn.
Peterson.
Wynn.
Pratt.
Wynn.
Sharon.
Lucas.
Sparks.
Lucas.
Torres-Ray.
Lucas.
Bonoff.
Lucas.
Breinert.
Lucas.
Dorholt.
Wynn.
Fitzsimmons.
Wynn.
Franzen.
Wynn.
Gruenhagen.
Wynn.
Johnson.
Lucas.
Bien.
Lucas.
Nornis.
Wynn.
Norton.
Lucas.
Poppy.
Lucas.
Rosenthal.
Wynn.
Swedzinski.
Wynn.
Tease.
Wynn.
Winkler.
Lucas.
Pulowski.
Lucas.
Members, what I'd like to do is just hear from people. So, you know, Senator Torres-Ray said she thought we should suspend the rules. What do, you know, we have the rules. Let's have some discussion.
Madam Chair, did you announce the vote?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Before we move on.
Thank you. Members, the vote did not change. So, right, but we have to do them by body. So give me the votes by body.
Madam Chair.
Chair Pulowski.
Madam Chair, I'd like to have Mr. Gehring explain the statute, because there is another way here. And let's have Mr. Gehring explain the statute.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure there's necessarily another way, but we just want to clarify that there's a statute that prohibits the Joint Committee from forwarding more than one person to the convention. So there is an issue about the legislature being able to establish its procedural rules, and it may be able to sort of supersede the statute procedurally by sending two members, but just I want to make the committee aware that if you choose to do that, that it would be against what the statute says currently.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gehring, what about no recommendation?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenthal, there's no requirement in the statute that the committee recommend anyone. It just says you may not recommend more than one person. But as Representative Winkler pointed out, there's the procedures in the rules that have been adopted by the committee that require continual voting.
Senator Peterson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we suspend the rules and advance both candidates without recommendation.
Discussion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Can we do both? I guess my understanding, even without recommendation, I would clarification on that. I think you just make no recommendation. I think would be the...
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, the text of the statute says the Joint Committee may recommend no more than one candidate for each vacancy. So if the committee decided you are not recommending a candidate, but merely forwarding the candidate on.
Madam Chair, how about I move that we make no recommendation?
And
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I believe the motion would originally be to suspend the rules.
Right.
And that, so we would have to vote to suspend the rules in order to do that. I'm sorry, Senator Peterson. It's yeah. The Senate now. Madam Chair, I'm sitting over here safe with my Senate friend, so I'm
You know, members, don't take his tie off.
But Chair Pulaski and I had talked earlier about, you know, our intention, and we really did not come here with a preconceived intention, that it is the will of the committee, and that's this process. But it is a serious responsibility as a joint committee. So so that's also something to consider.
Madam Chair, if this is the process,
Representative Norris,
if this is the direction we're going, do all three of the candidates then, are they eligible to be involved, or is it just two finalists?
Mm-hmm. Representative Norris, if we are suspending the rules, then all three would go forward without recommendation.
That's right. Okay.
There would just be no recommendation.
No, there is no recommendation.
Right.
No. That is correct.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair.
There have to be an recommendation then on the floor.
We can vote for whoever we want on the floor. I mean, they're not bound by the committee recommendations. So, yes, all three or however many else you want, would be, you can vote on the floor however you want. So it's just a recommendation. But Madam Chair, I believe...
We're in discussion.
Well, the motion. But Senator Peterson, yeah, had a motion on the floor.
Right, and then I said discussion.
Okay,
on the motion.
Thank you.
This is, so members, were on discussion on Senator Peterson's motion, which was amended by Senator Fischbach's motion, correct?
Madam Chair, no, I did make a motion. I was just suggesting that potentially that was not the correct motion to make. But if Senator Peterson wants to amend the motion, that's fine. But I didn't make a motion.
Senator Peterson? Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, I don't want to disagree with Senator Peterson. I'm really fond of having him in the Senate. But I do want to say I think it would be unfortunate if we didn't recommend somebody. And I know that this is a difficult position that we're all in because we have great candidates before us. But I think that it is a responsibility of this joint committee to recommend the best candidate. And I trust this committee to do this with a little bit further consideration. So I'm new at this, but I'm wondering if we might not ask if there aren't additional opportunities for maybe the member or the candidates to speak, maybe for another minute or two, or to allow for additional discussion or questions. But I would hate to see us give back that responsibility and not really try to fulfill it. Even though we've reached what looks like a stalemate, I think we can get past it.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I would like to add bipartisan and bicameral support to Representative Ortman's comments, which is, I think it is a responsibility.
Senator.
Senator, well, Representative, Senator,
Chair.
Senator,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Senator Peterson got me confused when he stripped us. So I actually think we should try to make a recommendation. I think the body's expecting us to do that. The both House and Senate are expecting us to do that. And we could have a series of ballots. We could have a discussion, or we could just have a brief recess for a chance to discuss it amongst ourselves as well.
Madam Mr. Chair.
What is the motion before the committee right
the
now?
The motion before right now that we're in discussion about is Senator Peterson's motion, which actually may not be in order because he didn't move to suspend the rule. So I would actually have to say that Senator Peterson's motion is, while before us, is not in order.
Madam Chair, I would suggest perhaps that Senator Peterson withdraw the motion just for clarity's sake at this point, and then if we can get a proper motion before the body would be a place to start, or proceed with another ballot.
Senator Mr. Chair, Peterson. I'd like to withdraw my previous motion.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Madam Chair, I want to say that clearly it would be great if we could make this decision tonight. But what is clear is that any of us that change a vote tonight will mean that one of these individuals just simply will not be able to compete anymore. And I can't do that. So you can have me here all night long. I'm just not going to do that to either of the candidates, and I think that all of us think the same way, I believe, I don't know. So I would like to present a motion that we suspend the rules and submit no recommendation from this particular committee. So what that means is that everybody who wants to be a region simply will compete again before the entire House and the entire Senate. So we will do this with our colleagues, and we have to start all over again. But I just don't believe, Madam Chair, that we are going to be able to change our votes, because changing our votes means that one of these individuals will not be able to move forward. And I just don't think that's going to happen tonight.
So Senator Torres-Ray has put forward a motion to suspend the rules and to put forward these candidates with no recommendation. What I would like to assert with regard to, so we're in discussion. The motion is before us, and this is now discussion. Senator Torres-Ray, that is simply not the case. There, in the Regent discussion, believe me, I'm sure everybody will be before us in the body, because any senator or representative can put forward somebody who we do not choose tonight, and in my experience, that happens without fail. So,
and that's just fine. We just have another person.
So, more discussion on the Torres-Ray motion. Go ahead, Representative.
Yeah, is that motion so for all three of them to advance?
No recommendation. There would be no recommendation.
So all three would be eligible?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
So, that was clarifying. Representative Winkler. Mm-hmm. You, I thought you were talking.
I was talking, Madam Chair.
So members, Senator Sheeran.
I just want to be clear that we're talking about this in relationship to the 5th Congressional, the 5th District Congressional.
Yes.
Only.
Yes.
In this motion.
Correct. And members, I'm going to not support the Torres-Ray motion and say that it is a responsibility in my view, and I would be more in favor of having a brief recess and talking to each other, but again, it'll be the will of the committee. Yes, Representative Nunes.
Madam Chair, I was considering or would like to offer to suspend the rules and also then have a secret ballot. Suspend the rules to enable you to have a secret ballot.
So Mr. Representative Nornes, so Senator Torres-Ray's motion is on the floor, and so we would need to act on on that motion first.
I could, what's your motion?
You can withdraw your motion.
Madam Chair,
Senator Torres-Ray.
I would like to withdraw my motion to proceed with a secret vote if the committee wishes to proceed with another vote and then reconsider to have the motion afterwards if we're not able to make a decision.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair?
Senator Lurie.
Twice now there's been a recommendation that we consider recessing for a little while to just caucus and see, not adjourning, recess for a little bit and seeing if maybe this logjam could be broken. And I think that bears some consideration before we act to suspend the rules. I mean, I've done this a couple of times now, and you know, the open vote process I think is important. It may come to a point where we need to suspend the rules to get through this, but I think we should try to exhaust all other options before suspending the rules and try to operate within the rules, and a recess would be fine and would just consider, like the body to consider going that route instead first.
Yeah, thank you.
And members, we're trading off every half hour, so it is with pleasure that I hand the gavel over to Chair Pelosi, who will let you know why we can't do a secret ballot.
All right, I've just been handed Article 4, Election of Regents. The roll call shall be via voice on the recommendation of the regents. So we're going to have to vote by voice. That isn't an option for a secret ballot.
Mr. Chair, can you repeat that? That was from, what are you citing there?
I believe this is the Constitution.
Okay.
Joint rules. It's a joint rules.
Joint rules. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we're in tough shape on that one.
But now, Mr. Chair, would that be referring to the vote on the floor? Or do they how are they referring to committee and floor, or how would you read that? I guess I don't have it in front of me.
Senator Fischbach, these are the committee rules.
Okay, thank you so much.
Members, I'm going to ask for one more ballot. I don't think if we recess, people tend to scatter, and we could be here till the wee hours. And our decision-making process wanes considerably the longer we stay put, the longer we recess, and the longer we scatter. So I would request we go to one more roll call, and the clerk will take the roll.
No, they withdrew it.
Clausen.
Wen.
Eakin.
Lucas.
Fishbach.
Wen.
Kent.
Lucas.
Lori.
Lucas.
Miller.
Wen.
Ortman.
Wen.
Peterson.
Wen.
Pratt.
Wen.
Sharon.
Lucas.
Sparks.
Lucas.
Torres Ray.
Lucas.
Vonoff.
Lucas.
Breinert.
Lucas.
Dorholt. Fitzsimmons.
Wen.
Franzen.
Wen.
Gruenhagen.
Wen.
Johnson.
Lucas.
Lien.
Lucas.
Nornis.
Wen.
Norton.
Lucas.
Poppy.
Lucas.
Rosenthal.
Wen.
Swedzinski.
Wen.
Tees.
Wen.
Winkler.
Lucas.
Pulowski.
Wen.
Mr. Chair, in the House, Peggy Lucas received 7 votes and Dennis Nguyen received 8. In the Senate, Peggy Lucas received 7 votes and Dennis Nguyen received 6.
No. That's not right. That doesn't make sense.
We're still short.
It's the same.
It's 9-6.
There's no majority.
The same.
Members, seeing that there is no majority from each side, then I would suggest what we do is there will be no recommendation coming out of this committee.
That can't be right.
That can't be right.
Are those numbers correct?
No, it didn't matter.
If it is,
I'm going to do that all
day. If you have 7 in the Senate, do you have a
7?
So there's still no majority.
There's just a thing.
All right, so we still have no majority, and it would be my recommendation then that there will be no recommendation from this committee for the 5th Congressional District. All 3 candidates then could be nominated on the floor and votes.
Chair Pulowski, I'm sorry, there still seems to be some confusion.
Still doesn't change the outcome.
I think we should.
And Senator Fishbach,
this is
Senate staff counting. Just so you know.
It's a lot of pressure.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I didn't hear that you had changed your vote. So in the House, the vote was Peggy Lucas 6, Dennis Nguyen 9.
But it still doesn't change.
Why doesn't it change? Yeah. Madam, can you explain why it doesn't change the outcome?
Because it's the majority of
the vote. What was the total now?
It was the House.
This is Senate. Lucas had the majority in the Senate.
We should do ballots. We can't. Okay. But there has to be a voice vote.
It's the law.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair.
Senator Miller.
I'd like to move for a 5-minute recess.
All right. We're going to recess for 15 minutes. We're going to go till 8 o'clock, and we're going to regroup at 8. We will start sharply at 8, everyone, back in their seats at 8. To call the committee back to order. Are the mics on? Just to remind staff, when I say a time, I actually mean it. Art, the mics are on.
Let's go change the vote, Mr. Chair.
Members, what we're going to do, and I'm going to have Mr. Gehring explain it so when it's recorded, we know exactly what we're about to do. I'm going to make a motion to suspend the rules. To be clear, that motion will probably have to be done by a roll call vote, so it'll be a yay or nay vote. Once the rules are suspended, then the next motion will be, and I'm going to make sure that Mr. Gehring has it, will be to forward the names of all three. That's going to have to be a roll call vote, just to be clear. So, I move to suspend the rules. The clerk will take the roll.
Bonoff.
Aye.
Clausen.
Aye.
Eakin.
Aye.
Fishbach.
No.
Kent.
Aye.
Lori.
No.
Miller.
No.
Ortman.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Pratt.
No.
Sharon.
Aye.
Sparks.
Aye.
Torres Ray.
Aye.
Reinert.
Yes.
Dorholt. Fitzsimmons.
Aye.
Franzen.
Aye.
Gruenhagen.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Lien.
No.
Nornis.
No.
Norton.
Aye.
Poppy.
Aye.
Rosenthal.
Aye.
Swedzinski.
No.
Tease.
Aye.
Winkler.
No.
Pulowski.
Aye.
No.
Talk about Congress.
I'm going to leave.
Save the votes.
In the Senate, there are 7 ayes and 6 nays. And in the House, there are 11 ayes and 4 nays.
Yes.
Ayes have it.
Ayes have it, and the rules are suspended. My next motion will be to...
Mr. Chair.
Make sure if Mr. Gehring... I'm sorry, sir.
Mr. Question? Chair.
Senator Fishbach.
Could you explain a little bit better? We suspended the rules only for the purpose of making a recommendation of all three?
Yes.
Okay.
Forwarding all three.
No recommendation.
No recommendation.
It's
forwarding.
No recommendation, so all three would proceed.
So the motion would be no recommendation. And, Mr. Chair, is it appropriate for the chair to be making motions? Is that generally how the House does it?
Chair is a member of the committee. Anyone can make a motion.
But generally, you hand over the you turn over the gavel when your motion is under consideration. And I will not submit any formal issue, but I just was wondering about that.
Senator Fishbach, I've only been here 27 years. I've seen chairs make motions and members make motions. As long as you're a member of the committee, you may make a motion.
And Mr. Chair, I appreciate your long service, but I was just checking because that is traditionally not the way it's handled.
Senator Fishbach, I guess we have two houses with different traditions, but I have to operate under the traditions of the house that I'm serving in. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With respect, I hope that we will take another vote before we vote to make no recommendation.
So, Senator Ortman, are you making a motion then to, that's a formal motion, to take another roll call vote on the remaining two candidates in the 5th District.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if a motion is required, then I'd like to make that motion. I'm hoping that folks have given this some consideration over the break, and we may have a result.
All right, discussion to the motion. Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just like to remind members of the committee that the 5th Congressional District did meet and recommend a candidate. There are two members of this joint committee who are members of the 5th Congressional District, Senator Torres Rey and I, and all of you who represent different congressional districts may have regents who are selected at different times in the future by your congressional districts and are dealt with in a similar manner to the way this joint committee tonight is dealing with the recommendation of the 5th Congressional District. So for those of you concerned about particular candidates in greater Minnesota and so forth, just keep in mind that other parts of the state may treat your candidates differently in the future based on what we do tonight.
Further discussion. Senator Torres Rey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Winkler, thank you so much for saying that. We did spend considerable time, Mr. Chair and members, not only reviewing the resumes, but also interviewing them again. So this is, you know, we have spent considerable time in our district and have had conversations about this. So this was an important vote for the members of the 5th Congressional District who submitted the recommendation, and I believe that we were never told the margin of difference, but there was sufficient support for the recommendation that came from the 5th Congressional District.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair and members, that is the basis of my recommendation and my vote, was I do believe in that process, and I was asked by several, by every candidate who I would support, and I was clear that as chair it would be, you know, the will of the people, and so I just did want to echo that. And I understand everybody has an equal vote, and so while it may be the request of the 5th District members to honor their selection, it is also important that we all know we each have a vote.
Senator Ortman.
And Mr. Chair, I just wanted to echo what Senator Bonner has said. I respect the fact that the 5th Congressional has met, but this group in this room tonight has been tasked with making a recommendation, and a recommendation to both chambers. And I think that we should do that, and I think that we are still able to do that with further consideration and deliberation. I'm hopeful that we will do that and not leave this issue open to these bodies.
Further discussion. Seeing no further discussion on the Ortman motion, that we would take another roll call vote on the two remaining candidates in the 5th District. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Clerk will take the roll.
Bonoff.
Aye. Oh, I'm sorry. Lucas. Lucas.
Clausen.
Win.
Eakin.
Lucas.
Fishbach.
Win.
Kent.
Lucas.
Lori.
Lucas.
Miller.
Win.
Ortman.
Win.
Peterson.
Win.
Pratt.
Win.
Sharon.
Lucas.
Sparks.
Lucas.
Torres Rey.
Lucas.
Pulowski.
Lucas.
Breinert.
Lucas.
Dorholt.
Lucas.
Fitzsimmons.
Win.
Branson.
Win.
Gruenhagen.
Win.
Johnson.
Lucas.
Lien.
Lucas.
Nornis.
Win.
Norton.
Lucas.
Poppy.
Lucas.
Rosenthal.
Lucas.
Swedzinski.
Win.
Tease.
Win.
Winkler.
Lucas.
Mr. Chair, in the House, Peggy Lucas received 9 votes, and Dennis Nguyen received 6 votes. In the Senate, Peggy Lucas received 7 votes. Dennis Nguyen received 6 votes.
Seeing that a majority of the votes have been cast for Peggy Lucas will be recommended by the Joint Committee to the Joint Convention. Congratulations. We finished with this Thank one.
You. I was impressed with that.
Mr. Baring,
I didn't think that this could happen.
All right, members, we suspended the rules only for that vote. We are again operating under the rules, so it's clear to everyone that we're back to having a majority of each of the two bodies as we proceed with the next series of candidates. So we now have the students at large. And if they, I'm sorry, students.
At large.
Wait a second, hold it. It says students on this sheet. It's got students at large coming up. Oh, you want the at large next? All right. We'll have the at large candidates next. If they would all come down.
Did you want me to switch them?
No. I'm switching.
For every half hour, right. At large candidates. If,
would all the at large candidates come down, please?
Mr. Chair.
Candidates.
Our the agenda.
Members, members, I'm working off the agenda that's before me, but the rules say the students should be next, so we're going to have the students come next.
Thank you.
So, students, the chair was correct initially. I think I'll just stay here for a bit. Okay, students, come on down. We have 3 students. And if we do this in alphabetical order, we have Mr. Covello is first.
Covello.
I'm sorry?
Covello.
Covello.
Thank you.
Excuse me. And the timer is going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Hello again to many of you. To those of whom I have not been able to meet with, I will offer a quick history of myself. I am currently enrolled in the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus as an undergraduate in my second year of study. I am majoring in journalism with a focus on strategic communication. I am interested in pursuing a career in advocacy or nonprofit communications. I am enrolled in the University Honors Program, and I participate in recruitment efforts via work at the Office of Undergraduate Admissions. I hold a part-time position at the university libraries. I'm also currently serving on a search committee for a top-level administrative position, the Vice Provost for Student Affairs and Dean of Students, as one of 2 undergraduate members on the committee. I also hold a position within a student group on campus as treasurer for the American Indian Student Cultural Center, as I am a Native American student on campus. I'm from Illinois and have been in Minnesota for about 1.5 years now. I consider Minnesota my home. I voted here in the fall, and I will be filing my income taxes as a resident. I bring with me a vast breadth and depth of knowledge about the university and what it offers to its students. After all, most of my job at admissions is simply to know as much as possible about what we have to offer students. My close ties to several communities on campus allow me an informed and varied perspective, which will be extremely valuable to the Board of Regents, as most members, if they have attended the university, have not done so in quite a few years. While the student representatives to the board do work to inform members of the student perspective, it is imperative that the voting body has at least one member with insight to the campus environment, as it has changed a lot, especially within the last 10 years, as a new focus has been put towards undergraduate education and the division into 7 freshman and mini colleges on the Twin Cities campus. I feel that there is a disconnect between students at the University of Minnesota and the Board of Regents and the state legislature. I believe that having an undergraduate student as a member of the Board of Regents is one way to start lessening that disconnect. Support the U-Day, the rally and lobbying day organized by the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, brought hundreds of University of Minnesota students to the Capitol representing all of our campuses. The small group of activists, the Legislative Coalition, with a passion, or this small group with a passion for working for University of Minnesota and their fellow students, and they made that day happen. In my opinion, though, The reason it was not thousands of students is because many do not believe that we have the power to affect what goes on. Let me prove them wrong. As a regent, my main focuses would be to increase accessibility to the university, to act as a model institution for the rest of the country, and to increase accountability with regard to administrative costs. The cost of attendance, of course, is a facet of accessibility that is gaining the most attention. Tuition, being the main concern, has risen sharply, and the university needs to make sure that it is being as effective as possible and as responsible as possible with the tuition dollars it gets from students. As a current student, I thank you, members of the committee, for not going easy on the university. Of course, state allowances, a major form of the investment in the university, have also decreased sharply, as I'm sure you know, even though the investment, as President Kaler likes to advertise, has a 13-to-1 return. Accountability, or lack thereof, is raised as a defense for this decrease by some, and I agree that it is an extremely large issue, but I also think that President Kaler's Operational Excellence Initiative is certainly a step in the right direction. Though, using his words again, it is a long journey. Balancing increased administrative costs and lowered investment from the state is exactly the problem that I want to become involved with, specifically by serving as a regent. I'm thankful for having this opportunity, and I thank you for consideration.
Thank you very much. Abdul Omari.
Madam and Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for your time and service on the committee. Thank the staff for the work that you continue to do, those who care about the UN for my family, and continued support from family and friends. My name is Abdul Omari. I come as a young man born in South Minneapolis to a Jordanian mother and a Kenyan father who came here in the early 70s to pursue associate's degrees at MCTC. One finished a degree and one didn't, but they settled in South Minneapolis. My mom worked her way up the service industry in Denny's restaurant as a server for over 25 years and then gained general management when I was in high school. My father opened a small business where he was an electronics repairman and a wedding DJ. They raised children in South Minneapolis, from which I am the youngest. I had the opportunity to go through the Minneapolis public school system, attending South High School and then landing at the University of Minnesota for a Global Studies bachelor's degree, went on to get a master's degree at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, and now I'm currently enrolled in an International Development Education doctoral program. While there, I had three opportunities to study abroad in three different countries, which were amazing opportunities. Also during my time, I had the opportunity to engage in leadership. During my undergraduate, I served as the vice president of the Black Student Union, the president of my fraternity, as well as a regional representative, went on to be the vice president of the Public Affairs Student Association at the Humphrey Institute, and most recently had the opportunity to serve 2 years as one of 8 student representatives to the Board of Regents, and that term ended last May. One of the things that I've been engaging in lately is as a new board member for the Minnesota Red Cross, the Twin Cities Area Chapter, which has been a wonderful experience thus far. In the fall, I'll start my doctoral research, which is focused on mentoring and the ways in which youth-adult relationships impact educational outcomes for minorities, particularly thinking about West Africans, East Africans, and African Americans in the state, which is ever so important at this time, as we all know. If appointed to the board and this honorable duty, I'll come with 3 principles that will guide me. 1, students first. 2, access to students across the state of Minnesota. And 3, thinking about our land grant mission. From those principles come 3 guiding questions. As we make decisions and implement policy, how do they impact students like me? Statistics tell you that I shouldn't be before you, that I shouldn't have matriculated through the University of Minnesota. I'm very proud that I've been able to, and proud of the people who have supported me and helped me to do so. So I want to know how they impact students like me and students across the state. 2, how do our decisions impact access? I was raised miles from the University of Minnesota, 15-minute drive. My first memory was freshman orientation. It's unacceptable. We can and we must do better, allowing access to talented students across the state. 3, we just celebrated our 150-year anniversary of the Land Grant Act. So how do our decisions impact that land grant? We need to think about ways in which we can work with the state rather than for. research with the state rather than for, teach with the state rather than for, and completing our tripartite mission, serve with the state rather than for. The land grant mission has a commitment to all of Minnesota. It has a commitment to the increase in immigrants. It has an increase, or it has a commitment to the demographics that will change in the future. We need to make decisions for everyone in the state of Minnesota thinking about our land grant. Even people who will never attend the University of Minnesota. People like my parents. I'm confident that I can be the candidate and the person to ask the tough questions about how everybody in the state of Minnesota will be impacted, and ask those questions while also providing insight and avenues for us to reach out to everyone in the state. I thank you for your time. I'm excited for the question portion, and I hope for your support.
Thank you very much. Christopher Tastad. Mr. Tastad.
Madam and Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christopher Tastad. I want to say I appreciate the time to come and speak with you today. I'll do my best to be brief given our lead-in to the committee process here. So I will start out by first wanting to thank my family and friends that have come to both support and observe this process. My family made the trip out from Montevideo, and I think they'll be looking forward to a drive home this evening, hopefully in fine weather and good safety. So I also appreciate the supporters that have come to observe the process as well. Throughout this process, I've talked with all of you, introduced myself on some level, whether it be to a limited extent or to a further conversation. I've had conversations outside of this body with the legislature as a whole, understanding and looking for opportunities to give you as a voting member of this process, to vet me as a candidate, and also to possibly build a relationship and move towards something of a working order in terms of an understanding and a fruitful relationship. So I won't touch very extensively on my background since I have talked with you to some extent, like I said, of that already. But I will say my current status is that I'm a master's student at the university studying biology. I do research in the Muscular Dystrophy Center there, and I've done so for about 5 years, having recently completed my undergraduate at the Twin Cities campus in biochemistry. And I hope to plan on going to medical school following that and supplement that research focus into my practice as a doctor. Looking at this process and understanding and having these conversations, what I've really come to learn and understand is that this role as a regent, and not just on the university level, but in the legislative level here, is really about listening. Understanding that in talking with legislators, some of you have raised concerns. Some of you have highlighted issues. Some of you have asked questions. Many of you have ultimately shown interest. And I think that reflects the importance of the university and ultimately the role that we serve as regents in addressing and seeking out those conversations. In doing so, I hope to make listening the forefront of what I do, put that at the fore. And this process, I feel already I've built an image of what you as legislators see as priorities for the university as it relates to your district specifically, but also to the state as a whole. I also see it as of vital importance in the event that I would be nominated to maintain those relationships in listening and understand that as a part of what I would do as a regent is to maintain an open ear and ultimately come with the consideration of what we can bring back to the university in matching the needs of the state. In addition to that, I think listening is an important element on campus. Part of being a good regent means being an engaged regent. And there is a wide swath of constituencies. There's a wide range of individuals that the university needs to cater to and understand in terms of their needs. And the regents ultimately need to have a very broad scope of that. I feel my time on campus has been spent as one of listening to those needs. My time in leading the foundation of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition was one of building a broad understanding of not just on the Twin Cities campus, but system-wide, how students are affected in the legislative process and how policy decisions ultimately affect the lives and day-to-day pursuits of students and individuals on campus. In addition to that, I think that is reflected in the support that I've received from students, not just on the Twin Cities campus, but system-wide. I believe a letter was just passed out that was written by the student representatives to the Board of Regents who serve as non-voting liaisons to the board.
where these individuals from all five campuses have shown their support and endorsed me as the student candidate, indicating that I would be able to best reflect those needs of students. And ultimately, over the past 3 years that I've been involved in this legislative process, I've identified shared priorities, things that both the legislature and the university see, and in the interest of the state, and I'd like to highlight how my background effectively meets those. The first would be a statewide perspective. My background coming from Montevideo and now living, working, and going to school in the Twin Cities area is one, I think, of understanding regional contrast, understanding that there are discrepancies and needs that are different, and when the university is looking to take what is a collective statewide support and return that support back to the state, it needs to be considerate of how that impact is ultimately reaching and being most effective in every region that it can be. And I feel my perspective and experience coming from that is important. I think my experience as a researcher on campus doing biomedical research for the past 5 years is of value as well. Just to highlight, historically there has not been a student ever that has had a science background of physical sciences. And
I just want you to wrap up too.
Sure.
Thank you.
Gladly. That this is of great importance as well. In doing so, my vision for the university is one that fulfills and exceeds the expectations of its core mission, one that is accountable to students and the public's trust that it's investing in the university, one where accessibility and affordability stand as the top priorities for the university, and one of a university that ultimately meets the needs of Minnesota. So I will yield and wait for questions.
Thank you very much. Members, questions for our students? And again, you know, words cannot express the talent and the appreciation we have for the caliber of candidate before us. So thank you very much. Any questions? I think the lack of questions reflects the work that you all put in ahead of time in terms of your spending time with each of the members of the committee. So we thank you for that. Oh, was there a question? Okay, very good. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think we can let them off the hook.
I thought you were going to.
So, this is a six-year term. Each of you are at different points in your educational career. So I just wanted you to perhaps you talked about it when you gave your introduction, but if you would just talk about how this is going to impact your life if you were to be elected to the region.
Mr. Cupview.
Thank you. So like I said, I'm in my second year of study right now, so I mean I would serve the first 2.5 years of the six-year term as an undergraduate member, undergraduate student at the Twin Cities campus. For myself, even kind of before deciding to run for the Board of Regents, I had decided that Minnesota definitely provides a good home for young professionals, specifically the Twin Cities, especially Minneapolis was named by Forbes as the best place for young professionals. So I was already planning on being here, very much so. Grad school is an idea, but definitely not something that I want to commit to yet. Could be in the works. But for me, as far as how, you know, so I definitely spent the first 2.5 years of my term again as a regent, as an undergrad student. I guess I definitely could balance it. I've always kind of been one that's juggling a lot of things, and I'd say I have experience with it. I currently balance two jobs, search committee, school, and the student group, and I definitely feel that I can add this on. No, some things will probably have to go, but I feel that this service is worth what I would have to sacrifice to make it work.
Thank you. Mr. Omari.
Madam Chair, members, you know, I always tell people that Minnesota is the place where dreams come true, and so I have 2 more years left as a student before I will graduate. I have to write a dissertation. So that'll probably take me at least 2 years collecting data and then writing, and plan to settle down here and work with the communities with which I've been researching or will be researching for my dissertation.
Chairs, Representative Poppy, my status, so I just recently started a master's degree. I'll have about 2 years going into that, and I currently have the intention of going to medical school, granting the acceptance of the University of Minnesota, I would then be a student for medicine for the next 4 years following. So there's a hypothetical situation where I would be a student for all 6 years of those term, or of that term. In addition to that, I guess addressing the other side of this coin with the question in balancing and making this a part of our lives, I guess I really feel that this role and what we're doing here is asking ourselves what priority do we put this on, and of what importance do we set with that, and how do we approach the role in light of that. And I would say that being a top priority, you would meet the role and the commitment to that with a semblance of that commitment as well, meaning it, for me, being a top priority, it becomes a level of engagement, making a commitment to regularly visiting the coordinate campuses, making a commitment to regularly engage a wide variety of constituencies on campus, and understand that it's important to reach out to individuals that not only reflect your personal experience, but also reflect a wide diversity of perspectives, and then take into consideration that we want to balance that against our time at school.
Mr. Omari has requested an additional follow-up. Mr. Omari.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Papia, I didn't answer the second part of your question. During my 2 years as a student representative to the board, I had a glimpse, a very tough glimpse of what it is like to be a regent, but by no means was I serving that role, of course. So I know the time commitment outside of meetings, as well as during the meetings and preparation and things like that, and then during my time as chair of the student representatives, my role was to convene the eight representatives as well. So I'm well aware of that time commitment and absolutely committed 100% to it. So thank you.
Representative Swedinski.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, questions to all three of you. You know, Minnesota has a diverse economy, agricultural being a big part of that. Just kind of what's your background when it comes to agriculture, agricultural exploits, well, business within the state? Thanks.
Mr. Cavillo.
Thank you. I personally do not have much experience with agriculture as an industry. I grew up definitely in a small town that was surrounded by farmers in very much a farming community. In no way am I a city boy from Chicago. That being said, again, I have no personal experience with farming.
Thank you. Mr. Omari.
Madam Chair, Representative Swedinski, I don't have firsthand experience with farming, but as far as we think about the research enterprise at the U, I served on the committee search as a committee member for the search for the Vice President of Research, who just took office in January. And so having that relationship with the Vice President for Research, and as we think about the research enterprise, whether it's agriculture or otherwise at the university, I think that relationship will serve well as we begin to think about how we provide agriculture advancement and things like that. So,
Mr. Tasted.
Chair, Representative Skubitsky. I have a connection to agriculture through my father. He works as part of the dairy industry for a company called American Milk Producers Incorporated. He will very soon be ending that time with them as a result of AMPI closing the plant that's located in Dawson. I think in terms of being connected with agriculture, this is not only a very direct connection with the understanding of the industry as it stands, but also the result of that plant closing and the impact that it has on my surrounding community. Very much is a direct impact of the result of peripheral effects in the industry. So not only do I see the importance of agriculture as an element within the state's economy, but also see the social effects that stand when certain elements of the industry are off balance. To answer the other element of your question, in terms of the diversity of the economy, I feel in addition to that, I not only recognize the importance of the other facets of when you look to something like the metro area being considered the medical device mecca of the United States, can not only highlight the importance of that, but can also look at my personal experience as a researcher on the ground in the biomedical enterprise at the university and be able to ultimately relate that to not just how we see that as an important element of the university, but actually how large downstream effects are going to impact what's happening on the ground for those individuals in their day-to-day pursuits.
Very good. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would like to hear from the students about their perspective related to income and what they have had to do to support themselves and to go through school. What we hear in our hearings in the Higher Education Committee as well as K-12 is that students' families cannot afford to go to college right now, and that is we need a voice here and everywhere on behalf of students who have to take loans and work in order to support their education. Could you briefly touch on your personal experience and what you bring as a student from personal experience to the board?
We'll start this time, Mr. Tested. Mix it up.
Chairs, Senator Torres-Ray, I appreciate this question. It being the student representative or student candidates, it's very much at the heart of what we ultimately bring to the board in terms of perspective. My current status is that I have shared costs with my parents, so both them and myself have taken on debt in order to pay for my schooling. I currently stand at $37,000 worth of debt as I move through my graduate career. And in order to pay for that, I maintained three jobs throughout my undergraduate career, and currently have one job outside of my own personal business that I maintain. Those three jobs were, one, my laboratory experience. I was fortunate enough to receive grants and receive funding, externally sourced funding, to produce my research and work in that context. My second job was as a teaching assistant, where I worked in an integrated biology lab and taught CBS majors in line with group-based operation. And I believe you members of the committee actually had an opportunity to see this in the student teaching or science and teaching and student services building, I believe, SDSS. And my third job was actually as a part of student government, where I received a small stipend for my service as a member of the leadership in student government.
Mr. Omari.
I'll come this way. Thank you, chairs, members. I have been working since it was legal for me to work, and maybe even a little earlier than that if you consider going to DJ weddings with my father. During undergraduate, I worked at Macy's. I worked at T-Mobile, and then I received a small stipend from the Black Student Union as vice president. During my master's, I held a graduate research assistantship, which pays a stipend, and currently I teach an undergraduate course as a part of a graduate instructor role, and then I also work in the Office for Public Engagement, and that totals about 25 hours a week. And since 2007, I've been working at the Varsity Theater as a bartender part-time on the weekends. And so I've maintained three jobs essentially throughout my entire undergraduate, master's, and into my doctoral degree. I currently hold, and say this actually on the low end of things to be where I'm at, about $22,000 in debt, and hope to hopefully keep it there and not continue to rise over the next 2 years. But who knows what will happen. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cavillo.
Thank you. So I'm 19. If you count being a newspaper carrier, I've been working for 9 years of my life. no, but I became part-time employed at 16, and I haven't been unemployed since. I began working the second week that I was at the University of Minnesota, and I currently hold two jobs, as I said before, and I don't make it two jobs just for the fun of it. I come from a family of seven children, and they're working very hard to put all seven of us through school at, you know, with whatever support they can provide. It's currently a mix of merit-based scholarships, help from my parents, and then taking on student debt myself. I'm set to graduate with right about the average student debt of about $25,000. So I definitely know what it's like. These are especially, this discussion is especially kind of dear to me, and especially with my experience in the American Indian Student Cultural Center. There's a lot of students who always talk to me about, you know, where they come from, and the different things that stop them or their friends from being able to attend when they want to. So, thank you.
All right, very good. So, with that sobering information, you know, we're both inspired by you, but also disturbed that it's so difficult. I think we're ready to vote. I don't see any more questions. So. Clerk, take the roll.
Bonoff.
Abdul Omari.
Clausen.
Tested.
Deacon.
Tested.
Fishbach.
Omari.
Kent.
Omari.
Lori.
Tested.
Miller.
Omari.
Ortman.
Omari.
Peterson.
Omari.
Pratt.
Senator Pratt, you've just been called on to vote.
Thank you. Omari.
Sharon.
Omari.
Sparks.
Tastad.
Torres Ray.
Omari.
Pulowski.
Omari.
Breinert.
Omari.
Dorholt.
Omari.
Fitzsimmons.
Omari.
Franzen.
Tested.
Gruenhagen.
Tested.
Johnson.
Omari.
Lien.
Tested.
Nornis.
Tested.
Norton.
Omari.
Poppy.
Tested.
Rosenthal.
Omari.
Swedzinski.
Tested.
Tease.
Omari.
Winkler.
Omari.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, in the House, Abdul Omari received 9 votes. Christopher Tasted received 6 votes. In the Senate, Abdul Omari received 9 votes. Christopher Tasted received 4 votes.
Congratulations, Mr. Omari. Thank you to all of you. So now we have our at-large candidates, and as per our informal rules, we trade off every half hour. I'll be allowing Chair Pulowski to complete the evening and hand the gavel over.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Miller.
Can I make a very important announcement I think is very fitting for tonight's occasion? I just want to announce that the Minnesota Golden Gophers beat the number one ranked Indiana Hoosiers tonight 77-73 in men's basketball. Whoa!
And if we would start, please, with Ms. Cohen, and then we will we'll proceed alphabetically. So please identify yourself for the committee. Welcome to the committee. And everyone, again, will have 5 minutes.
Chair Pulowski, Chair Bonoff, and members of the committee. As they say, good evening and go Gophers. I'm Linda Cohen, and I'm currently the chair of the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota, and that is a great privilege. And it is a privilege to be here with you this evening also. In the couple minutes that I have, I'd like to do 2 things. I'd like to talk about about 4 broad aspects of the university, things that I feel are important to focus on in terms of oversight. And then at the end, I'd like to just give you a little bit of personal interest in personal history about why I'm so devoted to the University of Minnesota. So one of the regents' major jobs is to have oversight and governance of the University of Minnesota. And to me, there are 4 areas that are really crucial. The first is students' success. We've heard from 3 wonderful students. We want to look at retention rates, graduation rates, financial aspects like keeping tuition down, the amount of debt that students have, and very importantly, at the same time, look at the quality of education that the students are getting. The second important aspect, I believe, is to have top-notch teachers, researchers, innovators who can work with business, who can do research for our state, who provide an economic engine. So both students and the faculty can provide economic advantage for the state. The third area, and we've talked a lot about that tonight, is operational excellence. I believe that we, in our non-mission-driven activities, we need to be as efficient and prudent with our finances as possible. We need to have an HR system that does best practice and is at the top of its game. We also want to have some of our decentralized activities, technology, for instance, brought into a more central activities. And the fourth element that I feel is very important is our public trust, that if we are very prudent financially and also offer quality education besides our public engagement, we will build and maintain the public trust. I believe that I've had the experience over the past 6 years which can really help me in that governance role, and have developed expertise to give scrutiny and oversight and progress to these four very important areas that warrant very close governance. And now I'd just like to tell you a touch about my personal history and my family. My mother and father were both first-generation college students, and they both came to the University of Minnesota and met each other, lucky for me. And they then graduated from the university. My husband received his medical degree from the University of Minnesota Medical School. I, as most of you know, have a PhD from the University of Minnesota. I have a brother and a son, one of our sons, who both graduated from the university. And my granddaughter, who's actually a student at the University of California, Berkeley, was here last semester at the University of Minnesota, and I like to consider that she's a fourth generation Gopher. So it would be my great pleasure to serve another term and a great privilege, and I hope I will have your support. Thank you very much, and thank you for your time.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, members of the Joint Higher Ed Committee and Workforce Committee. My name is Dean Johnson from Wilmer. I'm currently a member of the Board of Regents, elected the same time 6 years ago with my colleague to my right, our board chair, Linda Cohn. I have four brief points to bring to you this evening. First of all, an appreciation for those that elected me 6 years ago and had the opportunity to work with you as a member of the Board of Regents for a great university. One of the things that come to appreciate is the people of Minnesota perhaps don't always appreciate what this great university is about. Of 65,000 students, a $3.6 billion budget, employees well over 15,000 people. And one of the things that I have come to appreciate are our respective campuses at Morris, Crookston, Duluth, Rochester, certainly St. Paul, and Minneapolis, and the kind of programs and research and education that brings a great asset to our state. The second point I'd like to make, to be a regent is one of 12 members elected by the legislature to the governing board, and the word I like to use is trusteeship. You as members of the legislature, this committee, ultimately elect us to be a trustee of this great university in the matters, and what I place a high priority on is a matter of students and faculty. We must keep always in our sights that a university is about students, faculty, and researchers. Looking back over our term of office, and I said this to the Senate committee, Madam Chair, one of the best votes that at least I took, and I think it was unanimous on our board, was the hiring of President Eric Kaler. President Kaler is very bright. He listens, he visits, converses, makes a decision, and we move forward for the betterment of our state. As a regent, we are charged with tenure, matters of real estate, course offerings, awarding degrees, yes, the budget, which includes tuition. We also must remember the core principles, which have been mentioned earlier tonight, about teaching, research, and outreach. And Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, this is something that I feel deeply about, these next two statements. And that is, Regents, that we have accountability with transparency. Transparency for the legislature, the governor, and well as the public. And second of all, we do have autonomy with transparency to the public, and this accountability is very important. Briefly, my background, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I served in this body for 28 years, serving as minority and majority leader. I've served for almost 40 years as a parish pastor in Wilmer, a congregation of 2,200 members. I've served 38 years in the Army National Guard, retiring 3 years ago with the rank of Brigadier General. I'm married to Debbie of 3 years. We both had lost our wives, and we have a son, a stepson, Jeffrey, who's a lieutenant colonel in the United States Air Force as a pilot. So finally, Madam Chair, I respectfully ask for your vote and support that I might continue as a member of the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota. I feel passionately about this position for this reason. If we are to move forward as a state, as a society, much of it resides in education. For the betterment of our society, as men and women and students move forward in matters of environment, health care, transportation, agriculture, job creation, the sciences, and realizing that many of our professional people in Minnesota and the region, doctors, nurses, veterinarians, and other professionals are trained at the University of Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would solicit your support and vote this evening to continue as a member at large, the University of Minnesota Board of Regents, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Smith, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the
thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Kelly Smith. I'm currently the superintendent of schools in Belle Plaine, Minnesota. Yeah, I'm completing my ninth year there and my 21st year as a superintendent in Minnesota school districts. I want to thank you first for the opportunity to speak with you tonight about the at-large position on the Board of Regents. I've been interested in the university since very early in my youth, and I've been interested in the Regents for the past 8 years, watching the process and actually interviewing last spring as a second congressional district position was open as well. So I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you again today. So why am I interested in the University of Minnesota? I would like to give back to this great institution that has truly had a profound influence on my life and my family's life. Starting with 4-H programs as a youth in rural Minnesota, that were very instrumental in our community and county, to my undergraduate degree from the Morris campus in mathematics education, and then to my doctorate degree from the Twin Cities campus in educational leadership. I also have a brother who's a vet school graduate and a sister-in-law who is a medical school graduate. So we have paid our share of tuition to the University of Minnesota, but have received much in return for that tuition. I believe my experience as a school administrator in K-12 education is a valuable asset to bring to the school or to the Board of Regents, as the line separating secondary education and post-secondary education is truly becoming more and more blurred all the time, as we have P-16 initiatives, open enrollment, PSEO options for students. We are truly becoming one system, and I think I bring some knowledge of that education system. I believe that the ongoing challenge of the university administration and board is truly finding the right balance between all of the competing demands of the overall university system. I hate to bring up a three-legged stool analogy. Perhaps you've heard plenty of three-legged stool analogies. I understand Commissioner Franz has been around talking about taxes and a three-legged stool. But I look at the university as a three-legged stool as well, with the three legs being the mission of the university: teaching and learning, research and discovery, and public outreach. And a key to the overall success of the university is keeping a proper balance amongst all three legs of that stool and providing proper service in all three of those areas of our mission here. I believe most people would readily agree that they want the University of Minnesota to have the best and brightest professors on staff teaching our students. We'd like to have top research faculty, working to better the lives of Minnesotans and citizens across the world. And we'd like to also have outstanding public outreach arm of the university serving its citizens as well. However, all those things come with some caveats, and most people would like to see those services delivered with an affordable price in terms of student tuition, user fees, and public support through tax revenue. Finding that proper balance between cost and performance, that sweet spot, if you will, is truly the challenge facing board administration on a daily basis in all decisions that they make. And I believe I bring experience with those balancing competing demands decisions in my current role as a school superintendent. I've demonstrated that ability to balance competing demands through negotiations with various employer groups, seeking community support to upgrade facilities and provide additional operating revenue, and by working with community staff and board members to clearly demonstrate a vision of where our school district is headed and then identify what resources are needed for us to get there. I want to thank you once again for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I feel that I have the skills and experience in balancing difficult issues that would be valuable to the Board of Regents, and I ask for your support in this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Members, questions? Representative Doro.
Since I've been subject to some rather tough choices tonight, I thought to throw out a maybe not tough question, but in the House Hearing Committee, we had Mr. Fitzenreiter from the U of M respond to one of our questions, which was why did the tuition go up? Why did you raise tuition? His answer was because we could. And I recognize that it's not one person's decision, but it's a national growing trend. And I was just curious as to your response, especially since two of you have been there for 6 years of rising tuition costs.
Which of you wishes to go first? Ms. Cohen?
Certainly. I don't believe that we have raised tuition because we could. There might be a slight element that we haven't been as frugal as we might have been. Certainly we want to promote the excellence of the university, but I believe that the board and the president realize and understand that we want to be accountable for every dollar, for tuition dollars, for taxpayers' dollars, for philanthropic dollars. We want to make sure that we are spending each dollar in a responsible way. So I don't agree with the statement that we did it because we could.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not agree with that statement either. Part of the budget discussions in the Board of Regents was, in fact, the historical perspective is probably about 12 to 15 years ago, the state of Minnesota legislature governor provided about 40% of our operational money, and I believe it's something in the neighborhood of 17 to 18% now. So choices have to be made, of course. We have expanded increased costs of utilities, maintaining of buildings. But I think, and I'm going to go to this question because I've sat in some of your hearings, and both in the House and the Senate, and prompted by the Wall Street Journal article, which I think will bring about opportunities for the legislature and the governor and the regents to make some reformation. And let me be pointed about that. Two points. One is there was some question about severance package that was passed on to past employees. The regents, under the direction of Cohen Chair, appointed a committee, which I served on. We came back and put a new policy in place before that kind of severance package would occur in the future. It would have to be signed off by a board chair and the vice chair. Justification would have to be made. Second of all, a number of researchers was confusing by that article. It's been testified that 350 administrators were counted as administrators, where in fact they were, I think, administering research grants. We need to do a better job of cleaning up our personnel file, if you will, get folks, you know, into the right category. Finally, over the last 4 to 6 years, President Brunix, now President Kaler, most of our scholarship money has been centered on middle-income families of $40,000 to $140,000. Those that are less have, you know, Pell Grant eligibility. Those that are more have more other personal finances. Having said that, we need to do a better job, in my opinion, of managing the money and not, as we heard from the three students, this debt load is quite something, working two or three jobs. We need to be more sensitive to that issue, in my opinion.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, in my world, if we want to raise tuition, we need to voter approval to do that. And so I take that very seriously, and I certainly believe the Board of Regents takes raising tuition very seriously. But again, I'm going to use the word I used in my comments. It's about balance. And if we are desiring to have our university programs continue to have the excellence they have and to continue to move forward, resources are needed. And I think it's the Regents and administration's job to look at all available resources and then make those decisions between reducing programs and excellence or maintaining and improving programs and offset by an increase in tuition. And ultimately, I think that was the decision that was made.
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this primarily is for Mr. Smith, but I'm wondering about time commitment and if that is an issue. Since you're a superintendent, how do you factor that in as far as scheduling your time?
Sure.
Mr. Smith.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Nornes. I've been asked that question the 2 years I've been involved in this process, and it's certainly a legitimate question to ask. I am a busy person. If I lived in Bemidji, Minnesota, I would not be before you today because I think it would be an impossible task. I have a 45-minute drive to the University of Minnesota campus. I am in my ninth year in a school district that I know well. My board knows me and it has endorsed me to go forward in the pursuit of this position. I know there will be some conflicts, but I'm also an empty nester with a understanding wife who realizes this is a passion of mine. And I recognize there will be some conflicts, but I think because many of the events are scheduled in advance, I can work my schedule in both places to make it work as a Board of Regents.
Representative Nornes?
That was my question.
Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question I've been asking all the candidates as I've been meeting with them, and I ask this because I didn't have the fortune of meeting with one of you folks previous to tonight, but my district is in Greater Minnesota, and granted we don't have a campus right in my district. I have gotten emails from folks saying that they have concerns that the U of M doesn't pay enough attention or enough focus on the Greater Minnesota campuses. So my question is, what would you say to somebody from Greater Minnesota who has those concerns?
Ms. Cohen, we'll start with you.
Chair Pulowski, Chair Bonoff, members of the committee, and Representative Lean. Several things come to mind. First, the University of Minnesota is a system, and in fact we've moved from calling our campuses coordinate campuses to its University of Minnesota system because we include all five campuses. All of them are very important to us. Not only that, but we have 16 extension divisions and 21 research and outreach places so that we're spread over the state. And in addition to that, I just looked at a map from the medical school and or the academic health center, and it had over 100 dots on it where we have, veterinarians, dentists, pharmacy students, medical students, nurses in training over the entire state. So, and we don't, we have one president who is president of the University of Minnesota system, which is also a cost saver. We don't have a separate chancellor at the University of Minnesota, so that we really are trying to build it as a statewide system.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple points. One, when someone graduates from the University of Minnesota, and one of the privileges and honors we have is to grant diplomas at the various campuses, and it does not say University of Minnesota Crookston, University of Minnesota Duluth. It says University of Minnesota. So they are treated equally. Second of all, as chair of the Facilities and Operations Committee, we have 29 million square feet of facilities. We work very hard to spread the resources around all of Minnesota. Case in point, Crookston, a new dormitory was built. One is online, a new recreation facility. Case in point, Rochester campus. We're about to make some expansions in Rochester. Same way in Duluth. Chair Cohn has talked about extension. In a parochial way, we on Wilmer, where I live, we have the poultry testing lab. We have a new research facility. We have a dental lab operated by the University of Minnesota, same as in Hibbing. We see it as a statewide educational system, and we work hard, very hard on the board to be fair and equitable.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Representative Lean, being a Morris graduate, back in the day it did say Morris on my diploma, and I'm glad to see that's a change, because I do think the university has tried to make it one system. And I think this question goes back a little bit to a question of one the earlier groups here about perhaps changing the format of these campuses in rural Minnesota. And I guess personally, I'm against changing that format. I think we have specific areas of expertise in the campuses right now that students look to and that serve those areas well. Morris, for example, obviously is an energy research institute and a green institution, and working in research in those areas, as already has been brought up, I think sometimes the university does not communicate well enough the variety of research labs and other programs that are in rural Minnesota. In my area, they just started a partnership with the New Sweden Dairy, where the vet school has a separate facility right at that dairy for training purposes. I'm sure not many people know about that, even in my community, which is 15 miles away from that facility. So I do think there is representation. It's great that we have rural campuses that are serving those areas, and certainly the labs as well.
Representative Lean said.
Yeah, thank you.
Further questions? Seeing no further questions, we're going to go for a roll call, but this is going to be a little different. Representative Norton, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question for the chair, not for the candidates, and that was, we have a number of other candidates who applied for positions who also checked at large. Are those individuals also available to be nominated at this time, or only the three in front of us now?
Representative, our nominations were closed at the beginning of the meeting. Nominations were closed when I asked for more nominations.
Mr. Chair?
Pardon?
Mr. Chair, I think that, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the nominations that we closed at the beginning of the meetings were any candidates that were not before us tonight, but I believe any of the candidates we heard from tonight are also eligible to be nominated for the at-large position.
If that is Representative Norton's question, yes, that would be correct.
So can I clarify again, since
yes.
I apparently wasn't clear? We have had a group this evening in three different interview groups, and many of them had checked at-large.
Yes, that's correct.
And so I'm asking if those candidates as well are available for these at-large positions, and if so, you can give the directions, but we can choose from any of the at-large candidates available, that's what I'm trying to ask.
That would be correct, Representative.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, Just to be clear, I don't. I could be wrong, but I don't think they necessarily would have had to mark at large. I think it's any of the candidates that we heard from tonight are eligible for any of the positions that they're qualified for. So obviously, the student position is done, but we couldn't nominate a non-student to the student position. But this being at large, I think any of the members we heard from are eligible for the at large.
Members, I'm going to read number three. If you have your rules before you, each person recommended by the Region Candidate Advisory Council is eligible to be interviewed by the Joint Committee and considered nominated for any position for which they are eligible. So, members, we're still going to go to a roll call. And I'm going to ask that you give us two names. And again, if they're nominated, you could give us a name other than the three that are in front of us. So I'm going to ask that you do this relatively slowly and clearly so that we can make sure that we get your vote recorded accurately. So the clerk will take the roll, and you're giving us two names. Representative Sandra Ortman.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, can you explain to us how the votes will be counted? Does each candidate need to have a majority, again, from both houses and a majority of the total in order to get a nomination?
Senator Ortman, that would be correct.
And, Mr. Chair, are we required to vote for two?
Senator Ortman, I would say no, you can abstain on one. That would be acceptable. You could abstain on both if you wish. Question. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you wanted to nominate one of the previous candidates, is now the time to do that? And I understand you need three.
Just vote for
them. Oh, you just vote.
Representative Grunhagen, everyone, all you would need to do is say their name.
Okay.
So it would just be the name of the individual, and I would hope you would use the last name might be the easiest here to record. You could give the whole name, but just so we can clearly hear you, you can give only two, or one, or none. Are we all right so far? Senator Miller, you okay?
Mr. Chair, I think you've explained it very well.
Kind of.
And Representative Norton looks like she's smiling. So the clerk will take the roll.
Bonoff.
Cohen Johnson.
Boston.
Cohen Johnson.
Eakin.
Cohen Johnson.
Fishbach.
Johnson Smith.
Kent.
Cohen Johnson.
Lori.
Cohen Johnson.
Miller.
Cohen Johnson.
Ortman.
Cohen Johnson.
Peterson. Peterson. Pratt.
Johnson Smith.
Sharon.
Cohen Johnson.
Sparks.
Johnson.
Torres Ray.
Cohen Johnson.
Pulowski.
Cohen Johnson.
Breinert.
Cohen Johnson.
Dorholt.
Cohen.
Can you repeat for clarification?
Cohen Johnson.
Fitzsimmons.
Cohen Johnson.
Franzen.
Cohen Johnson.
Gruenhagen.
Smith and Wesson. I mean. What committee am I on? No.
Smith and Wynn.
Did the clerk get the...
Yep. All right. Not to be different, but...
Johnson.
Cohen Johnson.
Lean.
Johnson Smith.
Nornis.
Johnson Smith.
Norton.
Tusku Smith.
Poppy.
Tushu.
Rosenthal.
Tushu.
Swadzinski.
Tusku Johnson.
Tees.
Johnson Smith.
Winkler. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, in the House, Linda Cohen received 6 votes. Dean Johnson received 10 votes. Tusku received 4 votes. Nguyen received 1 vote. Smith received 6 votes. In the Senate.
Would you repeat that?
Yes,
just a little more slowly, please.
Yep. In the House, Cohen received 6 votes. Johnson received 10 votes. Tusku received 4 votes. Nguyen received 1 vote. Smith received 6 votes.
We've got a conflict here.
Smith has 5 votes, excuse me.
All right, so we've got a correction. Smith has 5 votes.
In the Senate, Cohen received 9 votes. Johnson received 12 votes. Smith received 2 votes.
All right, for clarification, congratulations, Mr. Johnson. You have been elected, and we're going to take another vote. And this vote, you will be voting for only one candidate. And all of the rest of it would hold true. If you wish to go to another nominated candidate that was nominated this evening, you would be appropriate to do that. So, Mr. Johnson, thank you, and you're excused.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate it very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Poppy.
I do have a question, Mr. Chair. Will either of the low votes, any of the low votes, be taken out of consideration, or is it...
Representative Poppy, if we did, Wynn would be the low one with 1 in the dropout. Mr. Gehring, I'm going to let Mr. Gehring explain. So, Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, rule number 10 of the rules that are governing the committee process this evening says if there are more than 2 nominees for the vacancy and none receives the necessary votes to be recommended to the joint convention, the nominee receiving the fewest total votes cast by the Senate and House members shall be eliminated and the process will be continued until a nominee receives the necessary votes. So in this case, Mr. Chair, I believe Mr. Nguyen received the fewest number of votes.
So he would be eliminated.
But, Mr. Chair?
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious because it says, and none receives the necessary votes to be recommended. So Mr. Johnson, Regent Johnson, received it.
Did not.
So you've got an issue there, because this reads that if none receives it, and in this case, at least one did.
I would rule they're all in. They would all be in again. So we'll go one more time. You're only voting for one. Clerk will take the roll.
Bonoff.
Cohen.
Clausen.
Cohen.
Eakin.
Cohen.
Fischbach.
Smith.
Kent.
Cohen.
Lori.
Cohen.
Miller.
Cohen.
Ortman.
Pass.
Peterson. Pratt.
Smith.
Sharon.
Cohen.
Sparks.
Pass.
Torres Ray.
Cohen.
Pulowski.
Cohen.
Breinert.
Cohen.
Dorholt.
Cohen.
Fitzsimmons.
Cohen.
Franzen.
Smith.
Gruenhagen.
Tusku.
Johnson.
Cohen.
Lean.
Smith.
Nornis.
Smith.
Norton.
Tusku.
Poppy.
Pass.
Rosenthal.
Cohen.
Swidzinski.
Tusku.
Tease.
Smith.
Winkler.
Mr. Chair. Madam Chair.
Representative Poppy.
I'd like to vote for Cohen.
Representative Poppy votes for Cohen.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. In the House, Linda Cohen received 7 votes. Kelly Smith received 4 votes. And Arturo Tusku received 3 votes. In the Senate, Linda Cohen received 8 votes. Kelly Smith received 2 votes.
No one. We did not have the required majority in both bodies, so we're going to take another ballot. Candidates would remain in. We're going to go again. Clerk will take the roll. We're under roll call. We're under roll call.
Bonoff.
Cohen.
Clausen.
Cohen.
Eakin.
Cohen.
Fischbach.
Smith.
Kent.
Cohen.
Lori.
Cohen.
Miller.
Tusu.
Ortman.
Pass.
Peterson. Pratt.
Smith.
Sharon.
Cohen.
Sparks.
Cohen.
Torres Ray.
Cohen.
Pulowski.
Cohen.
Breinert.
Cohen.
Dorholt.
Cohen.
Fitzsimmons.
Cohen.
Franzen.
Smith.
Gruenhagen.
Tusku.
Johnson.
Cohen.
Lean.
Smith.
Nornis.
Cohen.
Norton.
Tusku.
Poppy.
Cohen.
Rosenthal.
Cohen.
Swidzinski.
Cohen.
Tease.
Smith.
Winkler. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, in the House, Linda Cohen received 9 votes. Kelly Smith received 3 votes. Arturo Tuscu received 2 votes. In the Senate, Linda Cohen received 8 votes. Kelly Smith received 2 votes. Arturo Tuscu received 1 vote.
Having received the majorities in both bodies, congratulations, Ms. Cohen and Mr. Smith. Thank you again, and it isn't over until a joint convention meets on the floor. So, I want to thank Senator Bonoff and also all of the Senate staff and all of you for being very patient tonight, and we will see you in the joint convention. Meeting is adjourned.